We are talking about the Useful to Usable project today, and I'm going to give a brief overview of the project. I am the project director. I'm at Purdue University. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the role of social science in climate risk management and how we've used social science in the U2U project. And then I'll talk to you a little bit about some of our other talks that are coming up. So one of the premises behind U2U is that successful crop production relies on favorable weather and climate patterns, but limited seasonal climate predictability can increase farm vulnerability. And so we need to do something about that. And yet our current tools and models are not widely used. And we hypothesized in our project that one of the reasons they might not be widely used is that they're not meeting corn farmers' and advisors' needs. So the vision of U2U, and we started about 4.5 years ago, so we're in our 5th year of a 5-year project, so we're coming to a close. Our vision was to transform existing climate information into usable knowledge for ag decision making, to give farmers the resources and training to more effectively manage for variable climate conditions, and to increase Extension's capacity to address agroclimate issues. And I will humbly say that I think we have managed to do all of those things. So, so throughout the course of this morning, you'll hear how we've done some of those things. Our ultimate goal is more resilient and profitable farms in a variable and changing climate. Obviously, that's a long-term outcome that I will not stand up here and tell you we have accomplished in the course of the last 4.5 years. Our team consists of a number of different disciplines, and if you were in Dr. Ramaswamy's session yesterday, you might have heard him call out our project for doing a really good job of incorporating different disciplines and bringing those different voices to the table. Our team consists of climatologists, crop modelers, agronomists, IT specialists, economists, sociologists, extension people, and more. We just can't list them all. Lots and lots of different institutions involved, and you can see all the logos of many institutions here, and you'll hear from several folks from different institutions this morning as well. We started out with 5 project objectives. So our first 2 objectives, the idea was for these to be carried out concurrently. So on the one hand, we were going to take existing climate data and do climate models to see what happened under different scenarios. You're going to hear about a lot of that work this morning. And on the other hand, we were collecting stakeholder input, with the idea being that we're going to develop decision support tools that sort of fit in the middle of what could we comfortably feel like we could model with the data that we had at hand, what did stakeholders actually want and need, and then develop decision support tools that actually met those needs. We then proposed to disseminate our decision support tools initially through 4 states, although we have actually done that in more than 4 states so far, but the original idea was to pilot those tools and our methods and our outreach, and then in year 5, where we are now, to be disseminating the tools across the 12-state region, which we are doing now. So ultimately, our goal was to transform useful information into usable tools, hence our name, Useful to Usable, that actually get used. So if I was to name a project again, it would be like Useful to Usable to Use. We could be U3U, I don't know, something. So we wanted stakeholder interaction from the beginning and throughout the entire process. We philosophically believe that that's really, really essential to developing products that people actually want and will use, and I think our work has really proven that to be the case. We also have done regular evaluation of our tools and our team to ensure that we're meeting people's needs. And you'll see at the end, the final talk this morning in our session is about evaluation. I'm also doing a talk this afternoon. I am doing a talk this afternoon in an entire session on evaluation, where U2U will be a case study of successful evaluation. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the stakeholder input work that we've done during my time this morning. And our stakeholder input work was to understand the use and value of climate info for ag decision making and figure out good methods of disseminating that information. Most of our stakeholder input took 3 forms. So we did producer and advisor surveys, we did focus groups and interviews, and we also did a network analysis. I'm going to share some of the results from our surveys today, and Adam's going to be sharing some results from some of the interviews that we did. Yes, good. And we have lots of other results that you can certainly read about in journal articles or talk to us about. The surveys that we did 2 surveys. We did a survey of ag producers, so large corn farmers across the Midwest in these black outlined watersheds, and we did that in conjunction with the Sustainable Corn Project based out of Iowa State that Lois Wright Morton runs. We combined our funds and did a survey of producers together. We also surveyed ag advisors, and we defined our ag advisors in ways that haven't really been defined before. Usually when people survey ag advisors, they tend to just survey extension and stop, because that's That's the group that we at land-grant universities know the best and are most comfortable with. But there are a lot of folks out there advising farmers on what to do. So we surveyed CCAs, we surveyed bankers, we surveyed Soil and Water Conservation District staff. We had a list of about 10 to 12 different categories of advisors, and we spent a lot of time building our lists of people to survey. We only did that in 4 states because they were not easy lists to assemble. So we did that work in Nebraska, Iowa, Michigan, and Indiana as 4 states that are broadly representative of the entire Midwest. And the scope for our project, which I didn't talk about, is this North Central region. So the 12 states that are outlined here is the scope for our U2U project. So we did our producer and advisor surveys in February and March of 2012, and you can see the types of questions that we asked here. We asked about use of weather and climate information, risk management strategies, climate concerns and climate change concerns and beliefs, and influential information sources, and I'll share some of those results with you today. We also incidentally did do our advisor survey again the year after to see if the unprecedented drought in the Midwest in 2012 impacted advisors' climate change beliefs, and long story short, it did not. Okay, so what did we learn? So the blue bars on these charts are farmers or producers, and the red bars are the advisors. And this is a chart that shows the percent of people who are concerned or very concerned about different weather or climate-related issues on agriculture. And what you see here, it's arranged from sort of left to right, where left is most concern. So we see the highest level of concern was longer drought. Remembering, these surveys took place in early 2012, when the Midwest was coming out of flooding. The drought had not yet happened, and yet pre-drought, the largest concern was drought, which I think is interesting to note. Followed by issues like increased soil erosion, increased weed, increased heat stress, etc., all the way down to increased flooding, which was the lowest level of concern, coming out of floods, right? So that's interesting. I think it speaks to the impact that drought has compared to potentially to the impact of flooding. We also asked people about what type of climate information they used. Again, the blue bars are producers, the red bars are advisors, and this chart is arranged from left to right, where left is historic data, in the middle we have current data, and in the right we have future outlooks. And if you look first at the blue bars, which are our farmers, you see a nice bell-shaped pattern, where most of the responses are focused on current weather forecasts, 1 to 7 day forecasts, and 8 to 14 day outlooks. That makes a lot of sense, right? If you're a farmer, you want to know what the weather's like today. What's the weather going to be like tomorrow? Can I get out? Can I plant? Can I harvest? Can I do my work? The advisors, however, are clearly taking a longer-term view. More of the advisors are using historic climate information and say they're using future climate information in their work advising farmers. This is one of the first clues to us that if we want to be disseminating our tools effectively, one of the audiences, perhaps we don't want to be targeting directly at farmers, but we might want to be targeting our tool dissemination at advisors as a group that's more ready and willing to use those tools in their advice to farmers. So another question that we asked on our survey was, please indicate how influential the following groups and individuals are when you make decisions about ag practices and strategies. This was on our farmer survey. And before I put the chart up, I'll tell you can't read the chart. Maybe you can if you're faster than I am. I'll tell you what it's going to say. I'll tell you how it's arranged before I put it up. It's arranged left to right, where the groups on the left are the most influential groups on farmers. The groups on the right are the least influential. So on the left, we see the most influential groups are family, chemical dealers, and seed dealers, followed by consultants. Extension is way down the list, and 40% of our larger corn farmers in the Midwest told us that they either have no contact with Extension or Extension has no influence on their farm management decisions. So if we want to be influencing farmers, we need to be working with the retailers. That is a very clear message that came out of the survey and other work that my group has done and other groups across the Midwest have been doing. The role of the retailers in terms of influencing farmers on climate issues or conservation issues is one that we can no longer ignore. So that's an important message from this chart. A caveat to this chart is that this question asked about influence. On other surveys that we've done, we've asked about trust. So we've asked farmers who they trust for information. If you ask farmers who they trust, the number one group is Extension. Right? So extension is a trusted source, but not necessarily an influential source, because farmers are not seeing extension on a daily basis. They're not seeing extension as often as they're seeing their retailers. So I just want to point out, don't equate influence with trust, right? That's an important piece of the message there. We did ask our ag advisors who they trust as sources for climate information. And we found I just mentioned farmers trust extension. What we see in this chart is that ag advisors, so those people who are influencing the farmers, also trust extension. So that's the most trusted group, followed very, very closely by scientists. And the bottom of this chart, people always like to look at, these are the most distrusted groups: environmental organizations, mainstream news media, radio talk show hosts, and blogs and social media are not trusted by our ag advisor audiences. But again, they do trust extension. So what this data says to us is that if we want to be influencing what farmers are doing and how farmers are using climate information, there is a role for extension. That role for extension, however, is perhaps not going straight to the farmer, but going to the advisors, the retailers who are influencing the farmers, and working with them and having the retailers and the other advisors then share our information with the farmers. And that is, in fact, one of the ways that we've been doing our outreach, is really trying to target more the advisor audience than the farmer audience. We also asked on both of our questions, on many surveys, we've asked this question about climate change beliefs, and we used this question that was first written by J.R. Buckle at Iowa State that breaks down the answers into five options. So climate change is occurring, it's mostly human. Climate change is occurring, it's equally natural and human. Climate change is occurring caused mostly by natural changes. There's insufficient evidence, or climate change is not occurring. We surveyed our scientists on our team, and what we found with our scientists is that all of us believe in climate change. Most of us believe it, 97% of us believe that it's anthropogenic in nature. So that's pretty consistent with all scientists everywhere. None of our team believed there's insufficient evidence or believed that climate change was not occurring. When we surveyed our advisors, we see that 25% of them don't believe in climate change. They're either skeptics or they're deniers. And about 50% of them, in fact, exactly 50% of them, think there is some anthropogenic cause. So it's either mostly human or it's at least equally human. When we survey the farmers, these numbers change again, and we start to see more skepticism and more denial with our farmer audiences than with our advisor audiences, and less of a belief in anthropogenic climate change. Why does that matter? I think that's a fair question that people asked me before we started the project, before we'd done our surveys. Why did it matter? It matters because when we look at the relationship between climate change and pretty much every other variable in our surveys, we find significant correlations. So we find that climate change beliefs are significantly correlated with perceived climate risks, willingness to use climate information, risk management practices, adaptation beliefs, and even who people trust as sources of information. So it is incredibly important to understand what people believe about climate change as we think about how we're going to message our tools, because that people's worldviews are so different based on their beliefs. So some take-home messages from our social science research. There is high concern for climate impacts, but climate information is underutilized in ag. Climate info has potential value for ag production. It needs to be useful, relevant, and context-specific. Usability and packaging matters. And it's really, really essential to have collaborative development of tools and materials with end users. And that farmers are greatly influenced by advisors, but advisors trust scientists and extension, so we really need to leverage that trust. The majority of the ag community believes that climate change is happening, but the views about the human role differ. Climate change beliefs, as we mentioned, is strongly tied to everything else, and worldviews matter. Communication and outreach strategies need to consider those beliefs and frame messages accordingly. And coming up in this session, we have more talks about how to communicate climate science to the ag community. We have some of the results of our Objective 1 work, so our crop and climate modeling. We have some presentations about the decision support tools that we've developed out of this project that are very, very exciting. And we have more information about how we've done our outreach and how we've evaluated our outreach. We also, this afternoon, have hands-on tool training that I encourage you to participate in. You can just stop by any time during this window, right, and just play with the tools. So you can go for the whole 2 hours if you want, or you can just stop by. It's over in the Hilton, 2:30 to 4:30. You can also get CEUs for attending that, and it's free. But don't miss any part or you'll miss great excitement. Good. We are exciting, so, and our tools are exciting. So you want to go for the whole 2 hours and, you know, I don't know, just, yeah. Yeah, go for the whole 2 hours. Or just go for part of it if that's all you can do. But I do encourage you to check them out. So thank you. We do have a sign-up sheet. If you'd like more information about our project, I encourage you to sign our sign-up sheet, which is now being circulated. Thank you, Jenna. We also have bookmarks about our tools that you can take bookmarks. We also have some flyers about our afternoon session, and we'll keep reminding you about those things throughout the day. And I think you can also follow us on Twitter, which you should do, because Twitter's great. And if you follow us and you hashtag this meeting, you might win a gift certificate, because that's what I did yesterday. I don't know what it's for, but I'm going to find out if I can ever find where I get it. So I have 1 minute for questions before we move into the next speaker. Dennis.
If you went back five years ago, what would you do differently?
The only answer that came to mind, I can't say publicly. what would I do differently that I can share? I'm not sure what I would do differently, because I think we've actually done really well. I would say the thing I would definitely do again is hire a project manager from the very beginning and hire a really, really good, really competent project manager. And we did that, and that is, she's not here today, Melissa Widhelm, who's at Purdue University. She is, without a doubt, the reason behind this project's success. So, yes. So that's not, yeah. If we hadn't done that, I would say we should have done it.